Okay, good afternoon, everybody. So today, as you mentioned, my name is Scott White. I work for the Utah Department of Health. So I'll be speaking on exploring the positives of negative data, the case management and surveillance benefits of incorporating negative data into your EOR systems. So if anyone in the room was at Rochelle, my colleague, her presentation earlier today, I'll hopefully be building upon that and speaking a little bit more on the basic surveillance benefits, and then additionally, my other colleague Matt Meacham is presenting next. So hopefully, everybody understands our negative data reporting by the end of today. So a little bit of background for those that weren't at Rochelle's presentation. So in January 2015, we instituted a new communicable disease rule that required all of our labs reporting via EOR to also report negative data for a list of specified conditions, and I'll go into that. One of the things, there's a few conditions to this. So utilization of the data is limited. There's only a few people that have access to the identifiable data. And then that data set is run through our rules engine. And any negative data that is attached to an actual case is appended to that case in our system. If it is not appended to our case, then we maintain it for 18 months. After 18 months, we then de-identify the data. That is in an effort to kind of limit some concerns on confidentiality for people that aren't actually a reported case of a disease. So for our specified diseases, we currently have 10. So chlamydia and gonorrhea are the two that I'll be speaking about today. Rochelle was talking about our Hep C activities earlier, and Matt's going to be talking about HIV. But as you can see, we have a variety of diseases, and the negative data plays a role in our case management and surveillance activities for all of these diseases. So as I mentioned, there are only a few authorized uses of the data. So the first is to determine when a previously reported case becomes non-infectious, so essentially a test of cure. The second is to identify newly acquired infections through identification of a seroconversion window, so as we were discussing earlier with Hep C, to detect acute cases. And then finally, to provide information critical for assignment of a case definition. So this would be to differentiate between a confirmed and probable case. And then additionally, as I mentioned, after we de-identify the data, we maintain that. And so what I'll be speaking about today is that there's a variety of other surveillance activities that you can utilize this data for, and that's not limited by the data rule. So a brief timeline here. So as I mentioned, we instituted this rule in January 2015. And at that time, we had two high-volume labs that were validated. So UPHL, which is our public health laboratory in Utah, and then LabCorp. And then shortly after, 2 months afterwards, ARIP was a validated feed for our negative data as well. And then you can see in February 2016, we made some changes to the list of reportable diseases that were required to report negative data. And then another note about this, throughout this timeline, we have also been onboarding other labs. And so we have been receiving other negative data reports. But these are currently the only three validated feeds, I believe. So Matt's going to be speaking a little bit about the case management benefits and how those negative labs are appended to cases. But I'm going to focus on what happens after we de-identify the data, what we can still utilize that data for. So the de-identified lab results are maintained in a denominator database. This contains all negative, equivocal, and other lab results. Positive lab results are not included in this database because they are appended to our cases within UTNEDS. So Informatics, our program has been very gracious to us epidemiologists in building very easily accessible export tools. And so we have this nice export tool where we are able to query certain variables and export data from this denominator database to perform analysis. It is de-identified, so we have some limitations on what we can query, what parameters. One of those limitations is that we currently have it so the lab results are set up to give us a date by month. So for this analysis, I looked at trends by month. If we would want to, you know, have more granularity in future analyses, we could explore changing the parameters and modifying how we de-identify things, but currently that's how it's been done. So for this analysis, I wanted to analyze statewide trends in STD screening. And so to do that, I combine laboratory data from the denominator database, so all those negative other labs, with positive laboratory results from our UT NEDS database. So this gives me a data set that contains all positive and negative labs. So anything that's been reported to us should be in this data set for that month. For a limitation, we're only including laboratory data here reported via EOR. Currently, we're at about 77% of our labs are being reported via EOR, so it's not a huge limitation, and one that we, you know, continuously hope to improve. But the reason for this is that we aren't getting negative lab data via manual report, and so for this analysis, we're trying to keep things consistent. So I'll go straight into some results because I think that there's some very interesting things that we were able to show. So this is our total gonorrhea lab tests by EOR reported and reported case of gonorrhea by month. So the total number of lab tests you can see on the axis on the left. And we see that as the throughout the time period, we've seen a general increase in the number of gonorrhea cases or gonorrhea labs that have been reported to us. I think that the main reason for this is that we've been onboarding new labs throughout the time period, and so we're getting more lab results reported to us. But it's also possible that the labs are doing more running, actually more tests. And then you can see that we've also seen an increase in the number of our reported gonorrhea cases during the same time period. So again, I ran the same thing for our chlamydia lab tests. Again, we see that there's been an increase in the number of chlamydia tests that are reported to us. And we've also seen an increase in the number of reported cases of chlamydia during the same time period. And I think of particular interest is this last 4 months, where we can see that when there are decreases or increases in the number of lab tests that are reported to us, we also see increases or decreases in the number of reported cases. So for chlamydia and gonorrhea, as they are primarily asymptomatic, their case reports are heavily influenced by screening rates. And so as we see dramatic increases in screening, we also see increases in our positive case reports. So I think something that I'll discuss further is that when we see these increases in screening, hopefully in the future we'll be able to identify what was responsible for that increase, if there's a specific testing event that brought in more people, or if there was a specific event in the news that caused more people to go in and get tested. So the next thing I wanted to look at was percent positivity on these tests throughout the same time period. So here the blue line on the top is our percent positivity for chlamydia. As a scale, you can see the top there is 10%. And gonorrhea is the red line, so a lower percent positivity. I guess a couple interesting things about this graph. You'll notice that chlamydia is far higher. This makes sense. Most of the time, we're doing joint chlamydia and gonorrhea screening, and chlamydia is a higher burden disease than gonorrhea is. But also, we can see that there is a decrease in the chlamydia testing or percent positivity. So we decided that this is probably an artifact of adding more labs that are reporting negative data to us. As we get more negative data labs reported to us, our percent positivity is going down. So we didn't actually trust that this is a real occurrence. So we decided to look at those three high-volume labs separately to assess whether they were also seeing a decrease in percent positivity. So the first one we looked at was our Utah Public Health Lab. You can see that they were not, that the percent positivity for chlamydia and gonorrhea, the two bottom lines, maintained about the same. And one thing you can see, usually the chlamydia and gonorrhea tests are run at the same time. So in October 2016, when we have different rates, that would be indicative of a data reporting issue. And so something that we'd want to investigate. And also, comparing this lab to other labs, they had higher percent positivities, which is probably indicative that they have a different population that they're serving. Mostly people that are getting tested at the Utah Public Health Lab are going to a local health department to get tested, maybe for symptoms. So then we looked at LabCorp. Again, we can see that the percent positivity remained constant throughout the time period. And we did see an increase in the number of tests that they were reporting to us. So perhaps they were improving their reporting or actually doing more testing. And finally, we look at AIRUP. And like I mentioned, we didn't validate their feed until 2 months into this, which is responsible for that sharp curve in the beginning. And they also dramatically increased. Again, I think that that might be due to them improving their reporting to the health department rather than doing an increased number of testing. So a few conclusions. As chlamydia and gonorrhea are often asymptomatic, reported case counts are heavily influenced by changes in screening. Our negative laboratory data enables us as state epidemiologists to assess trends in screening and positivity. And we found that analyzing trends by reporting lab is vital as additional labs are onboarded because they heavily bias the results. And some ideas for future research, we'd like to further define the population of Utah residents serviced by each of these reporting labs to kind of identify why we're seeing that large discrepancy in the percent positivity. And we'd also like to analyze screening data by local jurisdiction so that we can better pinpoint and triangulate those events that are responsible for increases in our screening. And finally, as we get to approach 100% of labs being reported by EOR, we should be able to start to estimate our screening rates on a statewide basis. So I think that there's a few things we need to address before that, but I think it's a lofty goal that we should aspire to. So thank you very much. Thank you.